With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Everyone, welcome to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm Bobby Sylvester, joined as always by Mike Teglier, and we're on Twitter. If you don't already follow us, at Bobby Fantasy Pro and at Mike Teglier NFL. Same handles on Instagram as well if you want to follow us there. Tags, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing much, dude. I wanted to ask you a question before we get into any football talk, and it's something that came across my timeline. So I don't know if you got to see during that Patriots game yesterday, the Patriots fans were booing. And I mentioned in the podcast last night my feelings on the matter. Should Patriots fans be booing? Bobby, you'll give your direct take. What do you think about that?
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I don't really like booing to begin with, but if there's a point in booing your team, I think the Patriots have reason. Patriots fans have reason to boo right now. I mean, I watched that game playing over on Sparlay, which I'm going to tell you guys about later. I had a lot riding on that game, and I was really disappointed as a Patriots fan for that game. And, you know, my dad's a Patriots fan. I was watching the game with him, and we were just horrified with how bad the team's been playing the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum where I believe that the team has done enough for that city where you should, like, give them some room. Understand that it's not the playoffs, and you've won so many championships, like, more than any other team in the NFL, and it's not even close anymore, where I believe that they have so much room where it's like, I think it would take, you know, another 2 months of this before I start even thinking about, I don't ever boo players because I don't think it does any good, but
right.
I think the Patriots have earned the right to suck for a little bit and not be booed, but I'm curious to hear what everybody else's takes are. So make sure you hit us up on Twitter at Mike Taglier, NFL, at Bobby Fantasy Pro, and let us know what your thoughts are on that, because someone told me on Twitter this, like, today, that he basically felt that they have a right to boo because they have high expectations. And I don't really get that side of the argument.
Sure. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I don't have a problem with that. My point is, what is the purpose of booing? At least, I don't think there's any purpose. What do they think the purpose of booing is? To communicate to the team, I don't like what I'm seeing. Hey, turn it around. It's been bad, man. They were so great at the start of the season, and it has been bad. So, I mean, I get it. I lived through the Rams years where they were winning on average, I think, 2.5 games over like a 6 or 7 year period. Like, it can get really bad, and this is nothing compared to that. But, you know, Patriots fans are upset, and for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, I understand being upset, but booing those guys, I'm just like,
they're still going to win the Super Bowl, by the way. Like, I know a lot of people are going to come after me and say, come on, man, get on the Ravens bandwagon, get on the 49ers bandwagon. The most complete team in the NFL is the New England Patriots. I'm sorry, you can't convince me otherwise.
I honestly think it might be the Ravens with how they're playing. I just don't know if they're on top of their game. Like, if every team...
Their run defense really isn't great, man.
But if every team shows up and plays their best game, I think the Ravens are the best team, just because Lamar Jackson.
I think the Saints.
If he's on, the Saints are a very good competitor. Obviously, they lost to the 49ers this week. That was such a fun game to watch. But
that was amazing.
The playoffs this year are going to be so much fun. There's so much like parity at the top of the league where you can see anybody doing it. It's basically who's on their game in the playoffs. And I'm with you in the fact that I don't ever want to bet against Tom Brady in the playoffs. I know that he hasn't looked good, and I really don't want it to be a Peyton Manning situation where you almost feel like the team would be better off like going with another quarterback. But at the same time,
well, he's playing banged up too right now. Like, how many quarterbacks would be out for the season with this elbow injury?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how significant that is because I think they probably would have rested him if it was really as bad as some people are making it sound. I think he's fine. I think age is catching up, and I think he's going to feel the aches and pains more as the season goes on, and we're seeing that impact his performance, not just in tough matchups, but in good ones too. So, unfortunately, we're here.
And it's not like Mahomes hasn't been playing through injuries either. I mean, he had a sprained ankle, came back from the knee issue earlier than we all expected. Last game, he was playing with the hand issue, whatever's going on there. He keeps getting better, man. I know the stats aren't there. I wrote about this in my Game Film article just earlier today. I know the stats aren't there saying Mahomes has been better this year, but you watch him on tape, he's a better football player than he was. We knew the touchdown rate was going to come down. His yards per attempt went down from 8.8 to 8.3, but remember, he lost Kareem Hunt. He was with that Tyreek Hill for a part of the season. He's played a much more difficult schedule. He's played through three injuries. When I watch him, he's improved, and we probably haven't seen just how good he's going to get. He's amazing, man.
He's still elite. That's the thing, is people are comparing his numbers, and he's not carrying you to a fantasy championship, you know, like he did last year, but he's still putting up elite numbers. His touchdown numbers have been down. I want to say that I think it's like
5.4%, and it was 8.4.
Yeah, but six of the last eight games, if I'm not mistaken, he's thrown one or zero touchdowns, and that's obviously a problem, but there's a lot of things going on with this Chiefs offense that I really don't understand. Like, all of a sudden, they can't run the ball.
Yep. All right, Tags, we're going to talk waiver wire today for week 15. A lot of this is just going to be who are the best streamers for the week, because you have to win right now. And we do have a couple guys in mind that you can stash for week 16. I'm sure we'll talk about those. First, though, I want to say congratulations to Dustin J from Texas. He's the winner of the Dak Prescott helmet giveaway. And I love when it ends up like the random number generator. Draw someone who's probably a fan of that team. Like, he's from Texas. I bet he's a Cowboys fan. So congrats, yeah. Dustin.
Congrats, man.
And that came to us from Pristine Auction. And we've got another one, actually. We're going to be giving away a signed Kenny Golladay full-sized Lions helmet. One of our lucky listeners is going to take home this bad boy. You can sign up. It's really easy to do by going to fantasypros.com/offers for details. Or all you need to do is leave a review. Just leave an honest review. We're not begging you to leave a five-star review or anything. If you think it's a five-star review, awesome. If not, let us know how we can improve at Stitcher or Apple Podcasts, and then take a screenshot of that and send it to us at contest@fantasypros.com. And by the way, I want to tell you about Pristine Auction. So, Tags, are you doing any Christmas shopping right now?
I slowly do my Christmas shopping. I do so much stuff through Amazon. As soon as Amazon Prime became like a thing, I don't leave my house. I mean, that's basically my rule on holiday shopping. I absolutely hate it when I have to go.
I mean, that's my rule all time of the year. But like, what I'm saying is, if you have anyone in your life who likes sports, where's the first place you're going?
Oh, it's Pristine Auction. I mean, you could find something of like every single team. And you were just mentioning that Kenny Golladay helmet. I don't have the Lions yet. I've been holding out to get like a Barry Sanders or a Calvin Johnson one. So if anybody wants to send me a Calvin Johnson or Barry Sanders helmet, I'm down.
I don't think anyone is probably going to do that worth quite a bit. But this Kenny Golladay one is a great find as well. Everything's guaranteed authentic. From only the most trusted sources on Pristine Auction. As Tags mentioned, there are hundreds, sometimes even thousands of items they auction off every day. So you're bound to find some great values, whoever your favorite team is, even whoever your favorite players are. I found some really obscure players on there that I got a signed Justice Hill mini helmet during midseason when his stock went way down. I'm expecting it to go up. So, you know, you can find all kinds of players like that to add to your cave. And when you go to Pristine Auction, it's free to sign up. Enter the registration code FANTASYPROS. First of all, it's going to give you $5 off, and it's going to tell them we're sending people their way. That way we can keep doing these contests. Again, that's pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. All right, Tags, you ready for the waiver wire, man?
I am ready.
It's not very exciting this week. I mean, we've got three wide receivers I'm pretty fond of. We've got one running back who could potentially be a great ad for this week if Josh Jacobs is out. Now, even with Josh Jacobs, I mean, he was a true game time decision. That means he's probably going to play this week. But let's say he has a 25% chance of being out. With those being the odds, is the upside worth making DeAndre Washington your number one waiver wire pickup this week, just in case?
For what it's worth, I think that there's like a 10% chance that Josh Jacobs plays this game. I don't think he plays at all. He was a game time decision, but that was more had to do with them not wanting to close the door on the last hope to their season. The Raiders are now out of the playoff race. They lost this game. There's nothing for them to play for, and Josh Jacobs was playing through a fractured shoulder. This wasn't something that happened last week, and it was like, oh, he hurt it, and now we're going to hold him out this week and put him out there next week. This is something that's going to affect him. There is zero reason to put him back on the field if he's your franchise at the running back position. So why do that? Playing through a fractured shoulder, it's just ridiculous to begin with. And that's maybe why we've seen his passing game usage backed off. So for me, DeAndre Washington is worth the number one waiver priority if you have it. He's worth the rest of your fab budget if you have it. Basically, do anything you can to get DeAndre Washington because they're playing against the Jaguars this week.
Yeah, they're playing against the Jags who are... I mean, I'm a Jags fan. I seriously cannot recall. You remember the Dolphins at the start of the season, Tags? I think the Jags are playing worse defense than the Dolphins were at the start of the season. Like, they've just completely given up. And I'm happy for it because I want a higher draft pick. But it's disgusting. You can pick on them so much. I was going to say, even if there's a chance, a good chance that Josh Jacobs is coming back, I would make Washington my number one pickup because he's going to be, if he's the starter, he's a fringe RB1, RB2 this week against the Jags. He had 20 touches last week.
Yeah, he had a lot, and he looks good on those touches. I talked about him on the recap show with Dan last night, saying that DeAndre Washington, I don't feel like that kid ever got a fair shake at the starting job in Oakland, and it was kind of a shame because he was stuck behind Marshawn Lynch, behind Doug Martin, and then Josh Jacobs gets drafted. You just know he's going to get buried, but he's done good with his opportunities. I don't mind DeAndre Washington at all, and they're going to be, I think they're 6.5-point favorites at home this week against the Jags, the team that you've mentioned multiple times has given up on the season.
I bet against them every single week. It's the easiest money ever.
Are you going to lay the 6 points with the Raiders this week?
Oh, man, I don't know about that. Probably, yeah, probably.
But yeah, DeAndre Washington is going to be definitely in the top 24 running backs this week, if not approaching that top 15 area.
Right, okay. I want to say one more thing about this Oakland Raiders backfield. If I have a late first-round pick next year, I'm drafting Josh Jacobs at the end of the first round. I think he's that good, Tex. What do you think?
He's good, but I'm. It's all about the potential of the offense and where they go. I can't wait to see what they do in the draft because the Raiders do have a lot of draft equity, and I'm curious to see what they do with Derek Carr if they're going to draft a potential replacement and say, you know, it's going to be a competition, if they're going to stick with him and continue to build the offensive line, or they're going to add receivers because that's a big need for them. So I'm really curious to see where this team goes.
They could get multiple starting receivers in this upcoming draft class. They've got 9 guys who are probably year one starters at wide receiver.
I haven't gotten into the college class just yet, but I will obviously as soon as the NFL season ends. That's where I dive into like head first. Josh Jacobs, the talent is absolutely there. I just want to see them use him a little bit more in the passing game. And again, we don't know if that's due to this shoulder injury that he's been playing through, but if Greg Olsen remains there, it seems like he wants to involve others in the passing game, which is a little bit frustrating.
I would agree with that. Also, Tex and I are going to be doing off-season episodes as well. Like, if your season is over, hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out on future shows because we're going to be talking about, hey, if you're in a dynasty league or a keeper league, who should you be trying to acquire this off-season for cheap? We're going to be doing looks ahead, the earliest mock drafts out there. We're going to be having a lot of fun. And also, Tex covers the NFL draft extensively. I'm involved in that as well, but I also do baseball, basketball, even some hockey, if you can believe it. So I'll be focused on that quite a bit, but we're going to be talking about the NFL draft at least once per week. All right, Tag, so after DeAndre Washington, the running back position is ugly. Now, a lot of people are clamoring, I'm going to pick up Patrick Laird. He's got the Giants this week. The week after that, it's another easy matchup. Cincinnati, I don't want to pick up Patrick Laird. Like, I can't imagine, even against the Giants, ranking him on my top 30 running backs. It's just the offense. Like, I think Laird has some strengths. I think that he could be good in a certain scheme, but it's not the Dolphins scheme. If you want to succeed in the Dolphins scheme, you either have to be super shifty, like Joe Mixon, a great pass catcher like Joe Mixon, or you need to be someone who just pile drives the line like Chris Carson, and Laird is neither. He gets hit before the line of scrimmage, and he just can't create those kind of yards. Like, he can run into holes. He's good instinctually. He's all right in the passing game, but I don't think he can do it in Miami, even in these matchups.
The Giants is not a great matchup. I want to be clear about this. Like, some people just remember Chase Edmonds going for 3 touchdowns against them, but the Giants, they acquired Leonard Williams from the Jets. And over their last 3 games, like, we're obviously, there's a game tonight that we haven't been able to see yet, but the Packers, 21 carries for 59 yards, no touchdowns. The Bears, 19 carries for 47 yards, no touchdowns. The Jets, 26 carries for 51 yards, 1 touchdown. So it's basically you need him to get it done through the air, and Laird has been involved in the passing game, which is why he's going to carry that flex value this week. I think against the Giants, he's more of a flex type play, but going against the Bengals, that's a game where there should be plenty of value to go around. And like, even thinking about this Giants game a little bit, with Devontae Parker now in the concussion protocol, we don't know if he's going to play. Albert Wilson in the concussion protocol, we don't know if he's going to play. So all of a sudden, there's so many targets that have to go around, and Patrick Laird is going to walk into plenty of them, and that's hard to find on the waiver wire at this point in the season. So and then knowing he has Cincinnati next week, he's going to be startable in both matchups. It's just understand that you're somewhat limited in the upside that he gives you.
I guess I'm a little bit lower on Laird than you are. I actually like Peyton Barber a little bit better this week because he gets Detroit. Now, granted, we don't know if he's going to get 11 carries or if he's going to get the 17 carries we saw in week 13 against Jacksonville, right? But he's going up against Detroit, and in my mind, that makes him a top 35 play, whereas I wouldn't put Laird there this week. Now, next week, Laird is going to be in the top 35. I'd rather have him than Barber. But if you need to win this week, if you're desperate to pick up a streamer, you can't get DeAndre Washington, or maybe Josh Jacobs comes back, I think I'll have to be recommending Peyton Barber. It feels disgusting. I don't want to play him. Don't hear that. But I don't think he's the worst play in the world. He's a lock for 5-6 fantasy points.
I don't want Barber at all. Like, I put him at the bottom of my list, to be honest. Just because the matchup against Detroit, ever since they started out the year terrible. Like, they were like one of the worst run defenses in the league. And then from week 8 through week 14, there hasn't been a single team who's averaged more than 4.4 yards per carry against them. Barber is not getting a whole lot of touches. They're still saying that Ronald Jones is the starter. Now they're without Mike Evans. Jameis Winston's playing through a fractured finger, apparently. He might not even play at all. I don't like this game at all. This just feels like one of those games that's going to be awful between Tampa Bay and Detroit. It could be multiple backup quarterbacks, and that might mean a few more touches for Barber, but even if it was Ronald Jones in the waiver wire, I don't think I could recommend picking him up and playing him, because I don't want to be tied to a Bucs running back at all.
All right, so who is your number three then? Darwin Thompson, Chris Thompson, Jalen Richard?
Yeah, it'd be Chris Thompson. He caught 7 passes this week from Dwayne Haskins, and this is like really the first time he got to play in a big role in a game that they kind of fell behind. Looking against Philadelphia, they're not going to be able to run the ball with Adrian Peterson. Darius Geis is on the shelf. He's not going to play the rest of the year. So Thompson is a guy that is going to lead the team in snaps, and knowing that he caught 7 balls against the Packers, I kind of like him against Philadelphia. I mean, Dwayne Haskins needs a confidence builder, and he's a guy that's going to catch some passes. So, I mean, it's not sexy, but at the same time, if you're looking for that floor, especially if you play in like a PPR format, I think Chris Thompson can give it to you.
Did you see that catch Terry McLaurin made yesterday? Holy cow, man.
Oh, yeah. That was ridiculous. Like,
Dwayne Haskins tried to ruin another touchdown, 3rd straight week for Terry McLaurin, and McLaurin was like, not this time, dude. It's not happening.
Yeah, it was pretty sick. One-handed catch, and then kind of like transitioned it over to the other hand. I saw that live as it happened, and I was like, whoa, that had to be McLaurin, because I don't know if anybody else in the roster would do it.
I don't know. Calvin Harmon's also really dang good, man. He's just been hidden by snap count and obviously Dwayne Haskins, but I think Harmon's got a future as being a wide receiver 3 in fantasy football.
Here's something outside the waiver wire. What do you do with Darius Geis in Dynasty? Because there's going to be people out there right now looking to buy like dirt cheap on him. They're going to say, whatever, his owners are going to panic. He's on the shelf again, but we've seen glimpses. Do you sell him? If you own him, are you selling him? And if you don't, are you buying him?
I don't own him because, you know, I sold him while his stock was very high. He was tied to Washington's offense. I don't care how good you are. Like, Todd Gurley was, he's incredible, right? Well, he was before all the knee stuff or whatever. But when he was tied to Jeff Fisher and that Rams offensive line and Jared Goff as a rookie, he was horrible. It doesn't matter how good Darius Geis was. He was going to be horrible because he was with Washington. So I sold him. Now I'm watching him and he's not the same player as he once was. Like, okay, he's had a couple really big runs. Guys, those were either wide open holes or blown assignments. He's a little bit fast for his size, but I'm not especially impressed with him. If you ask me right now, is he a top 30 running back in the NFL? I would say no, without hesitation. And he's still tied to an offense that I don't think is very good. I'd be selling Darius Geis if I had him.
And we don't know what offense he's going to be tied to, because obviously they're going to be hiring a coach. And you have to wonder if it's going to be a defensive-minded coach or, you know, we don't know. There's a lot of uncertainty with him. And all those injury problems, they have to add up over time. You can only take so many surgeries. So I would be of the mindset to see what I can get selling him if for whatever reason you do still have him. I'm not one of those guys that's buying him right now.
I would agree with that. All right, Tags. Darwin Thompson, I guess we probably need to talk about him. He got some work in the passing game, but it was Spencer Ware who led this team in snap. So I would just advise everyone to stay away from Darwin Thompson. Do you agree? And is there any value to Spencer Ware?
I agree. There's no way that you could play him with any confidence. Spencer Ware actually led this team in snaps this week. It's ugly, man. Again, outside of Damian Williams, I'll say it again. Outside of Damian Williams, no running back on this team has totaled more than 14 touches in a game. And even if there's an injury to McCoy, even if there's an injury to Spencer Ware, we've seen all these injuries happen, and Darwin Thompson still has a very minimal role. He's just one of those guys that if for whatever reason you have like three dead running backs in your roster and you need to find someone and he's 1% owned on the waiver wire, like you can grab him, sure, and just toss him in there and hope for the best, because he does offer one play potential. He's like one of those guys that can break one play and make a fantasy week, but yeah, I wouldn't bet on it, especially against Denver.
Yeah, he's not in my top 60 running backs for the rest of the season, so I don't really see much upside. Wide receiver position, we have the same top two. Why don't you tell him who yours is?
I'm gonna go with AJ Brown.
Or have you changed your mind on me?
I'm going with AJ Brown. I don't think that there's any way that I could make a case for the other. I mean, I guess I can, but I don't want to. AJ Brown is just playing like a madman. And it was kind of like a realization that happened to me this week, where me and Dan and I were talking about AJ Brown quite a bit, because it was obviously a massive performance and he's out there breaking tackles. Just like, basically, if you go and try and tackle AJ Brown, you better come correct, because he will run you over. Like, it's like Derrick Henry version of a wide receiver. AJ Brown is just looking.
He's awesome, isn't he? He's so great.
Yeah, but the thing is, he is kind of coming up in this offense with Ryan Tannehill, right? I mean, we know that Mariota didn't get much time with AJ Brown in the offseason because Brown was dealing with injuries. We know that AJ Brown wasn't in the starting lineup to start the season. And when he started to get more snaps was when Tannehill came on. So him and Tannehill have kind of grown together, and you're seeing him like be super efficient. Now, I don't think he's going to remain someone that, you know, is putting up 150 yards and two touchdowns a week, obviously, but it's the worrisome part is that he does have a few games, like over the last 4 weeks, I think he has two games with four targets. That's really worrisome. But at the same time,
yeah, but it's increasing.
It's one of those things where we have to stop betting against regression, because obviously he's just outperforming what everybody expects him to do this year. And Corey Davis is still seeing some attention. So I'm going to go with AJ Brown. The guy's just playing too good for me to like dismiss.
Yeah, I've got AJ Brown as my number one. I'm sure you guys could have all saw this coming, because I was high on AJ Brown last week, if you guys remember. He's also got a great matchup this week against Houston. Tagsy might be in my top 30 wide receivers. I mean, I know there's some risk here, but the upside is just so good.
Yeah, I'm going to have him, like, I've actually already started researching that game, and I think I'm going to have him in, like, the high-end wide receiver four territory, because since they acquired Gary and Conley, they've actually been a much better secondary. It's just about the lack of targets, where there's other guys ahead of him that I, like, we were having the conversation. It's like, would you start Robbie Anderson or AJ Brown? Like, that's the conversation that Dan and I had, whereas, like, Robbie Anderson's getting double-digit targets the last couple weeks, but he's going against Baltimore, and you have AJ Brown versus Houston. It's really tough for me to say. I guess I'd probably go with AJ Brown, but it's really close.
So my number two is Zach Pascal. Is that still your number two?
Zach Pascal is still my number two. I don't necessarily like the matchup for him against New Orleans, though, because like he's like basically perimeter only in terms of what he does in that offense. And Eli Apple has been pretty good this year. Marshawn Lattimore is obviously good. Whereas the 49ers, they kind of mix and match their receivers. They get Sanders in the slot. They get Samuel in the slot. Whereas Pascal, he might have a more difficult time, but knowing all the targets they're missing in Indianapolis, he kind of needs to get targeted. So he still is number two.
Yeah, he's number two for me as well. 19 targets in the last 2 weeks, 18 and 20 PPR fantasy points in those two games. And granted, one of them was against Tampa Bay. Again, I'm with Tags. I don't love the matchup against New Orleans, but besides Brown and Pascal, there's a pretty big drop off to number three. So I've got them in that order. And again, Brown has risk. I guess Pascal has some risk as well. My number three is different than your number three. You've got Allen Hurns. I've got Anthony Miller. Where do you have Miller? I've got Hurns as my number five wide out.
So Miller is, I have him at number four, so I'm not far behind you. I understand why you want to pick him up, but he's another guy that his targets are just so volatile. Like he has five games with seven or more targets, but then he also, but every other game that he's played in, you know, we're talking about 8-game sample size now, where he's had four targets or less. Green Bay and Tremont Williams.
Yeah, but that was when Taylor Gabriel was active. Taylor Gabriel is not going to be active.
We don't know that yet, though.
When Taylor Gabriel's not active, Anthony Miller averages like 8 targets a game.
Well, Gabriel was out against the Cowboys, and Miller still only saw 4 targets in that game. That's my concern. Now, granted, you know, Trubisky was very efficient in that game. They didn't need to throw the ball.
He still had 13 fantasy points, by the way.
Right. Yeah, he scored a touchdown, and it was like it was about time, because he was like well overdue for a touchdown. But Green Bay against the slot with Tremont Williams had been really, really, really good. That's the reason I don't really like Anthony Miller this week. But I understand why you want to pick him up, but I would rather go with Hearns. He's a guy that we could expect targets from. I actually wrote him up. So I do a waiver wire stash article. I wrote him up before Devontae Parker was dealing with this concussion because they're playing against the Giants this week. This is a team that I've talked about. They're allowing a lot more through the air than they are on the ground as of late. And I mean, ever since Preston Williams left the lineup, he's been seeing plenty of targets, like in between 5 and 8 targets every single week. So if you get that many targets against the Giants, you know, with Janoris Jenkins and DeAndre Baker, you kind of have to like Allen Hurns is like at least at the very minimum a wide receiver 4.
He's definitely capable. He's a competent wide receiver that Fitzpatrick can throw the ball to. And we've talked about Fitzpatrick as an end of the season good quarterback to stream because he's got matchup against the Jets, the Giants, the Bengals, and obviously Allen Hurns, if Devontae Parker is out, is going to get a lot of targets. Are you worried about Isaiah Ford, though? He looked pretty dang good.
Isaiah Ford was somebody that a lot of people liked out of college. I didn't mind him. I thought he would go a lot higher than he did. It was either, was he 6th, 7th round or undrafted? I can't remember. He went really...
And I was thinking, like, someone's going to get a steal in the 3rd or 4th round.
I think I had, like, a 4th round grade on him. I did like him. So, I mean, I have no issue with Ford, but Fitzpatrick's shown in the past with Preston Williams and Devontae Parker, he can support 2 fantasy-relevant wide receivers. He really can. And, again, knowing that Albert Wilson, he's dealing with a concussion as well, I mean, there's just so many targets available in this offense because Miami's going to throw the ball because they can't run it. They legit can't run it as a team. If you were to tell someone that you have Allen Hurns guaranteed, I think I could say at minimum guaranteed 6 targets. I think it's probably closer to 7 or 8. Against the Giants, you'd probably say that I'm probably going to start him because against the Giants, I mean, that's a team that allows high efficiency on those targets.
I suppose. I mean, I've got him ranked right now as wide receiver 46. So he's a decent flex play. I like Miller a little bit more. I like Breshad Perriman a little bit more, too. Where do you have Perriman?
Perriman is right behind Anthony Miller, actually.
Okay, so we got the same top 5, just a little bit different order.
Yeah, and I have Justin Watson right behind Perriman. I don't necessarily like Breshad Perriman, and this all comes down to understanding Jameis Winston's fate because he's diagnosed. They think that he can play through it, but apparently he's getting a second opinion, which is never obviously a great thing.
So he might go less than 400 passing yards this week.
He might. Yeah, no, Jameis Winston, man, I don't know. It kind of feels like a Jay Cutler situation to me where he might have all the tools in the world. He just doesn't have it upstairs, and he's just too inconsistent. But I'm guessing the Bucs are still probably going to get him a new contract and get him whatever, but... I don't feel like that's my end line is like Allen Hurns, the guy that I feel comfortable with. Anthony Miller, it's like, okay, it's not the worst guy, but I don't think I feel comfortable with Breshad Perriman just yet. Knowing
he's a dart throw, man. He's a dart throw. You're either getting 90 yards and a touchdown or you're getting jack squat.
Well, right. And you wouldn't start him without Jameis Winston. So that's...
Oh, of course not. No chance at all.
Right.
Okay. So we got really good matchups the next 2 weeks against Detroit and Houston. He's going to be a really good GPP play, but he's like a wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5 type of guy where it's like, okay, if you need to start someone, cross your fingers, you're 20-point underdogs. Let's put Breshad Perriman in there and see what happens.
Yeah, that's basically it. And that's why, like, those are guys that I really don't want to rely on in the fantasy playoffs if I don't have to.
All right, Tags, we have got some more wide receivers to talk about. Obviously not as exciting as the first 5, but first, earlier I told you guys about Sparlay. It's a new sponsor that we have and a new website that I'm really excited about. And in fact, they launched just 8 days ago. We're recording this on Monday, so they launched on December 1st. And Tags and I got to be part of the trial with, like, you know, 30 or so people around the industry who got to see what it was like, give them some feedback and everything. Tags, you want to tell them who won that?
Not really. I don't want to tell him.
It was me. It was obviously it me. Tags actually finished like number 2 or number 3, but I dominated. And if you look at the leaderboard right now, who was that in first place? It's me.
Bobby's been killing it.
I'm loving Sparlay. How great would it be if you guys could win $25,000 a month from betting on sports without having to risk a single penny? Sparlay, patent pending, is the first ever peer-to-peer sports betting platform. It's 100% free. There's no fees at all. It's literally free to play. Sparlay CEO, I guess, is just that dumb that he wants to give me $25,000 this month, or to you if you can pass me up, but it's going to be really difficult because I've got a nice lead. Why do Vegas odd makers get to be the ones that create the lines, Tags?
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
It's bull, man. Sparlay's putting the control back with the sports bettors. They give you the ability to make your own bets and to take somebody else's crummy bets if they put them out there. Instead of going up against a bookie or sports book, you get to go up against other users. You decide which bets to make and which to take. On the first of each month, they're going to put 100 Sparlay tokens in everyone's account. You get to use those tokens to create and accept bets with other users. And at the end of the month, the user with the most tokens is taking home $25,000. And if you run out of tokens, no biggie, you get an additional 100 Sparlay tokens for each user you refer, up to 20. This is actually why I'm in first place tags, because my bets really haven't been that good this month, especially like the Patriots one. I lost, I don't know, 270 tokens on that Patriots game. The referees lost it for me. I made the right call, but...
Oh, you're blaming the refs too, huh?
Yes, of course. That's why I'm in first place, is because I referred users. You guys can do the same thing and pass me up. You guys, signing up takes 30 seconds, 100% free. There's not even an option to put in your credit card or banking info. You have nothing to lose and $25,000 to gain. Go to playsparlay.com right now and sign up. The contest just started a week ago, so you've got a chance to climb to the top of the leaderboard and claim that $25,000 top prize. Stop giving away your hard-earned cash to bookies. Bet for free at playsparlay.com and bring home the $25,000 grand prize. Did I mention it's 100% free? Go to playsparlay.com and win fat stacks of Benjamins with no risk. Remember, all new and current users, you can jump to first place just by referring 20 users with your unique referral link. Head on over to playsparlay.com and get into the action. Play SPARLAY.com. All right, Tags, let's finish the wide receivers. Who do you have at number six?
Well, I was teetering here with like Justin Watson, but I lowered him after thinking about it. I'm going to put Cole Beasley there. I don't really feel great about it, but we're in the range with Cole Beasley and Isaiah Ford and Justin Watson. Like, these are guys that I really don't want to play if I can help it. And I'm sure there has to be someone better on their roster, right?
How many times has Cole Beasley failed to get at least 8 fantasy points tags?
It's actually 9. The number, I put the stat out there like not long ago. I want to say he's had at least 9 PPR points in 11 of 13 games this year. So he's
all but one. All but one, man.
That's what I'm saying. It's crazy kind of what he's done. And Pittsburgh is really good on the perimeter. Steven Nelson has played really well. Joe Hayden is there. So obviously John Brown's going to have somewhat of his hands full. They haven't been really giving offense overall to any wide receiver position, but if there's anywhere, I think Cole Beasley with the amount of pressure that Pittsburgh brings with their pass rush, because based on averages, like they pressure the opposing quarterback on average more than any other team in the NFL. So if that's happening,
are the Steelers the best defense in the NFL?
I wouldn't say they're the best defense. They're really good.
They're number one in fantasy points, for what it's worth. I mean, they're keeping Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges in games.
They're definitely top 5, I think, defense for me overall, but I don't think I'd say they're the best. But at the same time, ever since Micah Fitzpatrick got there, they've been like a different unit. And if they do bring that pressure to Josh Allen, they need to develop a game plan to get the ball out of his hands, and that's through Cole Beasley. So he's a guy that gives you somewhat of a floor if you're looking for the last minute replacement at wide receiver.
So I know it's a bad matchup against Pittsburgh, and he gets one next week against New England, but week 12, Denver, 20 fantasy points. Week 13, Dallas, horrible matchup, 23 fantasy points. Week 14, the Ravens, 15 fantasy points. He just keeps getting it done, man.
Yeah, and that's why I put him at 6. I don't know if the upside's there like to win you a fantasy championship, but knowing that there's a lot of people who are now without wide receivers, because we didn't cover at the top, but we have Calvin Ridley, who is out for the season. We have DJ Chark, who's in a walking boot and probably out multiple weeks, they're saying. His season might be over. Mike Evans, fantasy season likely over. There's a lot of wide receivers that suddenly are injured, and people are looking for replacements. So if you're looking for someone to maybe not kill your fantasy lineup, I would go with Beasley.
Yeah, I think Gage is the same type of area. I mean, San Francisco is a great defense. They just got torn up by the Saints, but at San Francisco, it's going to be a hard matchup for Atlanta. They're obviously going to throw the ball a ton, but with Ridley out, I think Gage gets 7-8 targets, and that should be sufficient for a wide receiver 5 performance. Maybe he gets in the end zone and gets to a wide receiver 3. Is there anybody else you feel all right about? Randall Cobb, Deontay Johnson, Kiki QT?
No, it's a really bad week. Even Gage, for that matter. I mean, they got Austin Hooper back last week.
I agree. I don't like anyone behind Beasley.
Yeah, they got Austin Hooper back last week. Devonta Freeman's obviously back out there. Gage's role shouldn't change that much, to be honest, because he's still going to play the same role. I think Blake is going to step up in that spot, but it's really ugly. Even going down to like someone like Kenny Stills, he plays in the slot, and Logan Ryan's the best cornerback that's healthy on the Titans. Lazard playing against the Bears. I mean, it's really a bad time to be looking for a wide receiver on the waiver wire.
Yep, agree with that. Let's go to the quarterback position. It is not a bad time to look for a streaming quarterback because Ryan Fitzpatrick's still out there in 80% of leagues, Tags.
Yeah, I really wish that we would hear that Devontae Parker is going to be okay.
Me too.
It's screwing everything up, right? Because there were two streamers that I really did. I was like, I'm going to feel good with Gardner Minshew. I'm going to feel good with Ryan Fitzpatrick. But, I mean, now with Minshew possibly losing DJ Chark, with Fitzpatrick losing Parker and Wilson, it's uglier, man. I would say that Ryan Fitzpatrick is probably the one that I'd feel more comfortable with. But, I mean, Keelan Cole will step in for Chark. And, you know, they still have DD Westbrook.
You know what I think about Keelan Cole? I think he's a good player.
We probably should have put Chris Conley in the waiver wire conversation, right? For wide receivers? I think he's someone that I would actually trust over some of those other...
I'd put him number 7 behind Cole Beasley.
Yeah, I'd put him right in that territory as well. He was a guy that was seeing a lot of 7 target games, especially if Chark is out. That matchup against Oakland is a good one. I know that Minshew hasn't necessarily targeted Conley a whole lot, but there's been times where he's been a big part of that offense, and if Chark is out, yeah, I might actually put him at number 5 in front of Perriman.
All right. Gardner Minshew loves throwing the ball downfield to Keelan Cole, which is interesting to me. I mean, that's another GPP option. Keelan Cole can get up and win those jump balls. But I definitely got Ryan Fitzpatrick number 1. If Ryan Tannehill's available, would you prefer him over Ryan Fitzpatrick? Is he a top 5 quarterback? Like, really?
No, I don't know how high I'm going to rank him, but it's going to be friggin' high. I can tell you that. I already started looking at that. It's almost like last week. Why do we continue to doubt the kid? Like, he's now started 7 games. All but one of those games has netted at least like 19 fantasy points. He's able to get it done on the ground. We just saw Drew Locke light up this Houston defense. You know, teams have to account for Derrick Henry right now with the way he's running. And
exactly.
And so many people say, well, Ryan Tannehill, he's only throwing 25 pass attempts per game. And yeah, that's true. But the reason he's only throwing 25 pass attempts per game is because he's so damn efficient.
They're killing everybody, man. They're killing everybody.
Yeah. And so that's the thing, is if he's not as efficient, he's going to throw the ball more. So it's give and take here. Houston is terrible against the run, but if Derrick Henry can attract some of that attention, Ryan Tannehill's been able to take advantage of it. So, I mean, I'm going to have him as a top 10 quarterback this week again. I had him as a top 10 last week. I liked Ryan Tannehill more than most, but I'm not doubting him. And honestly, so I go through the games as I research them and I start ranking players as I get there. Right now, I have him right in front of Aaron Rodgers. So if I had Rodgers and Tannehill on a team, I think that I would start Ryan Tannehill.
That's amazing, man. Hey, I got a trivia question for you. Close Ryan Tannehill's game log right now. You're not allowed to look.
Okay. I'm not looking at it. I'm looking at our waiver wire list. Yeah.
All right. He's beat the Chargers. He's beat the Bucs. He beat the Chiefs. He beat Indianapolis. He beat Oakland last week by 20 points. Who did Ryan Tannehill lose to? Who's his only loss to, Tags?
They beat the Colts. I don't know.
The Carolina Panthers.
The Panthers?
How did they lose to the Panthers, man? It must have been like Christian McCaffrey week. Well, every week's Christian McCaffrey week, but you know what I'm saying. That's crazy.
That is crazy. I mean, the Panthers were like considered like a playoff contender for a while, and then all of a sudden the wheels fell off, and Kyle Allen he threw one interception, and then they just kept flowing.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. It is. I played the Falcons everywhere last week because of that. Okay, other quarterbacks, anyone else even worth considering? Mitch Trubisky has looked really good lately, but he gets Green Bay in Green Bay. Kyle Allen gets Seattle. I'm sure they're going to be playing from behind. Whether or not he throws 4 interceptions, he's still going to throw the ball 40 times for 250 yards and multiple touchdowns, right?
I don't think that I want to start someone who can get benched mid-game. And I think we're getting to that territory with Kyle Allen where the whispers are getting louder for Will Greer.
Yeah, why haven't we seen Will Greer? What's going on with that?
It's a really good question why we haven't. And now the interim coach, now they're saying, oh, we're sticking with Allen right now. And I still think there's a possibility if Allen starts out the game somewhat rough like he did, you know, last week, we could see them go to Greer, and it doesn't give Kyle Allen a chance at garbage time, which would really completely crush your fantasy season. So I don't want to rely on someone like him. Trubisky against Green Bay, I don't really like it. Trubisky hasn't played well against Green Bay over, you know, going back to last year. He hasn't been particularly good. They've done good at containing quarterbacks on the ground. If you go back to that week 1 game, basically the secondary said, we basically came into this game saying that if Mitch Trubisky beats us, then we're okay with that. And you know, Mitch has been playing better, but I don't think that I want to bet on him the second meeting against Green Bay.
Is he kind of like Jameis Winston, where the team is just trapped? Because they're not moving on from Mitch, are they?
It's difficult to move on from him, especially when Ryan Pace attached his name to Mitch Trubisky, because if they did move on from Trubisky, Ryan Pace is also going to get fired. And that's why I don't think that happens. And honestly, there's been glimpses, and I keep saying this, and Trubisky, you know, the way that this year started, I thought...
Like, same with Cutler, same with Jameis Winston, right?
Well, all the Bears really wanted Trubisky, all they needed him to be was a competent game manager that, you know, that we can let the defense win. We just need you to be competent. And over the second half of the season, he really has been. Like, over the last 5 weeks, I know you could talk about that Rams game, but over the last 5 weeks, Trubisky has been very competent. He's been actually above average. So I don't know. It's really difficult. And I didn't want to write him off, you know, after the rough start to the season. I'm like, you have to give it at least half a season. And he looked terrible. I thought there was no way he was going to turn it around, but he really has over the second half of the year. So,
you know what the difference has been? Anthony Miller.
It blows my mind. It blows my mind how they failed to use him in the offense.
He's so good, man. He's really good. Yeah, I think Trubisky's going to be fine, man. They just need to let him be himself, let him run a little bit, and he looks all right. You know, if the Bears were in the AFC, they'd be right in the heat of the wild card race. In fact, they'd probably be the favorites to get that second wild card behind the Bills. Or if they were in the NFC East, they'd be running away with it, man. All right, let's go tight end position. Actually, I wanted to tell you guys, today's show is going to be on YouTube, youtube.com/fantasypros. We also do it for Wednesday's show as well, so you can check it out. Hit the subscribe button. Tags and I do a waiver wire live stream where we don't just give you our opinions, updated opinions based on what happens with injury reports and everything. We answer Q&A for a long time as well. I do one by myself every Thursday answering start sit questions. Again, it's on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros. And Tags does a live stream on Sundays right before kickoff, answering your questions for an hour, giving you injury updates and everything like that. So if you're not already subscribed to our YouTube channel, I think you're missing out. Like, I'm not just trying to sell it. Like, I think we're giving you guys good information to help you guys win your games there. All right, tight end position Tags. You going Howard, Njoku, or Higby?
I'm going to go with OJ Howard.
That a baby.
I don't know how I feel about it, but it is what it is.
I mean, I don't have any of them in my top 12 tight ends this week, but among the guys you can pick up, I prefer Howard.
Yeah, this is provided that Jameis Winston plays, because if Winston doesn't play, then I'm going to move everybody down on that team. But OJ Howard has ran 61 routes over the last 2 weeks, which ranks 8th in the NFL, right above George Kittle, right below Darren Waller. So he's getting up there in terms of like usage, and knowing that Mike.
And it's not like he's not talented anymore. He's been just as efficient. They just haven't thrown him the ball, and they're starting to the last 2 weeks.
And they have to. I mean, with no Mike Evans, that clears up. Like, we're talking about like over 10 targets per game practically with Mike Evans that are freed up in that offense. They don't run the ball extremely well. I've already mentioned that Detroit has been better against the run as of late. So OJ Howard is someone that I would lean to, because we try and follow targets, and the targets should be there for him. It's really hard not to say David Njoku, but
he only played 21 snaps, was it?
Yeah, he didn't play a full complement of snaps. He saw 3 targets. You almost just wish.
And I don't know why. It's not like it was a lower body injury or anything. It was a wrist. Like,
he has openly said that he is healthy. He's like, because people were wondering why he wasn't activated earlier, and people asked him about it, and he said, I don't know. He's like, I'm healthy. There's nothing wrong with me. Yeah, he played 20 snaps.
Baker Mayfield's probably going to yell at the media about it after they lose to Arizona.
They had Steven Carlson play 39 snaps compared to Njoku's 20 for whatever reason.
Can you trust him against Arizona?
That's basically the question, right? And I wouldn't trust him more than OJ Howard. But if you're talking about, you know, versus guys like Tyler Higbee, yeah, I think I'd probably go with David Njoku.
Me too. Yeah, I've got him as tight end 15 right now. I've got Higbee at tight end 17. Going up against Dallas, not the greatest matchup. They're all right against tight ends. Last 2 weeks, over 100 yards in each game, 7 receptions in both. I don't know. There's a lot of people who are going to be playing Higbee. Why don't you like him?
So it's against Dallas. Dallas, I just don't see that game as very high scoring. Jared Goff really struggles in matchups against above average defenses. And Dallas is...
And away from home. He's in Dallas.
Yeah, they're that. It's an indoor game, which should obviously help. But I'm just not following that there. And Gerald Everett might play. We don't know yet. But Ian Thomas is someone that I would play over Higbee too. Thomas last week, 10 targets. They talked about a timeshare at tight end. And I'm still bitter about this, because when I did my write-ups last week, I said, if Greg Olsen misses, Ian Thomas is like a low-end tight end one. I liked him. And I heard the tight end coach talking and saying that we're basically going to use them in a timeshare at tight end. Not one is going to get everything. Well, he played 61 of 71 snaps. Ian Thomas went out there, saw 10 targets, caught 5 of them for 57 yards and a touchdown. So going against the Seattle Seahawks, who have really struggled against the tight end this year, I kind of like Ian Thomas again if Greg Olsen misses, but there's a lot of ifs there. Like Hayden Hurst, if Mark Andrews misses, Hayden Hurst walks into a role where he's kind of appealing. They're going against the Jets, who are likely to be without Jamal Adams, I would think. So there's like a whole lot of ifs, ands, or buts. So that's why I have Howard and Njoku at the top.
You know what's really interesting, since we were talking about the Rams for just a little bit, it reminded me. So Robert Woods played his usual complement of snaps, 99% of the snaps. Josh Reynolds was at 66% of the snaps. Tags, Brandon Cooks was at 39%. And Cooper Kupp, 29%. What in the world, man?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm guessing it was just like just to confuse the defense, because it's just more like the personnel that's on the field. They don't know what to do. But, I mean,
man,
it's ridiculous. I was going to tweet it out during last night's game, but then I was like, oh, I'm not going to add insult to injury for people that were playing Brandon Cooks, because have we ever seen a player go from such a reliable fantasy asset to irrelevant?
Yeah, he was 1,000 yards every year, an easy round four pick.
Yeah, I mean, even last year at the Rams, it's not like he was as consistent as someone like Robert Woods, but he was a guy that you relied upon for like high-end wide receiver two numbers most of the time. You understood there was going to be a little volatility, but he was consistent. And with every quarterback that he played with, and now all of a sudden, he's irrelevant.
It's crazy, man. So we've got four decent tight ends to pick up. O.J. Howard, David Njoku, Tyler Higbee, Ian Thomas. Sounds like we've got them in the same order. Now, Tags, let's go DST streamers. Then we'll play a quick game of drop or keep. So DST streamers, it's ugly this week. Like, all the teams that have good matchups are horrible defenses. So who are you picking up?
I disagree, actually. I think the Chiefs are not a bad defense, and I am going to say that they are my streamer of the week.
Oh, they are available in 70% of leagues. How about that?
They are, and I don't really understand why. So on the year, I've run through this game already. They've allowed 6.9 yards per pass attempt. That's 12th lowest in the NFL. They've allowed a 4.1 touchdown rate, 13th lowest in the NFL. A sack rate of 7.4%, 12th best. Have allowed just 0.41 fantasy points per actual pass attempt, which is the 10th lowest. They've allowed less than 22 points per game to opponents in general. Drew Lock is coming off a good game, yes, but he's now on the map where people aren't going to just take him for granted. The Chiefs are back at home. This game is at Arrowhead, which is known as one of the toughest places to play. The Chiefs are
coming off a huge win.
They're 11.5 point favorites in this game. It feels like this is a game where you just play the Chiefs defense and you understand they're better than people think.
They've got 28 sacks in the last seven games, Tags. Four per game. That's incredible.
They have this. Everybody seems to think they see the Chiefs in the schedule and they're like, oh, their defense sucks. Attack them. They're not really a bad defense.
They've actually got a really good secondary. I agree with that. So if you can't get the Chiefs, are you going Oakland face Jacksonville? Are you going the Giants against Miami? Are you going Miami against the Giants? Are you going Detroit against Jameis Winston or their backup quarterback?
I might go Detroit, depending. Yeah, that's like the gift that keeps on giving. Like, you and I, we talked about on the DFS show where we both said that we were going to play Indianapolis' defense. It was 2,400 for them in DraftKings. So it was like, okay, we're just going to do this because they're a cheap defense. It's very volatile, but we understand that Jameis Winston is the gift that keeps on giving. And without Mike Evans, it can only get worse.
Yep, I agree with that. And without Jameis Winston, it might actually get worse.
I don't know if that's going to happen. Now we're taking it a little too far.
All right, man. Let's play drop or keep. Is Juju Smith-Schuster coming back? Can we drop him? Same question for T.Y. Hilton, by the way.
I guess he's droppable because the way you think about Juju is that they have Devlin Hodges under center, and he's started three games now, and he's yet to throw more than 21 pass attempts in a game. So even if Juju gets a 25% target share, that's like five targets. That's not enough. So I do think he is actually, unfortunately, droppable. They're playing the Bills this week, too.
Yeah, what about T.Y. Hilton?
I would keep him just because he's someone that if he's actually on the field, you can play him with somewhat of confidence. This is the time of year where the guys on your bench, you're not playing those guys unless of like an emergency. And T.Y. Hilton kind of fits that role where if he is playing, then you do want to play him.
Yep, I agree with that. What about if Devontae Parker's rolled out early this week? Can we drop him, or are you saving him for maybe playing next week?
I would hold on to him for sure.
I would definitely hold on to him. Jameson Crowder, he's so volatile. Are we dropping him?
I mean, you don't want to rely on him, so I don't know if I'd drop him.
He's got 56 yards in the last 3 weeks, Tags.
I know. It's not good. It's not good at all. And Robbie Anderson's role continues to grow. They're playing Baltimore and Pittsburgh. Yeah, you could drop him.
I agree. Will Fuller, drop him.
Oh, that's tough. I don't think I want to drop Fuller.
He gets Tampa Bay in week 16. You can't drop him, man.
Well, even Tennessee, Tennessee this week, there's a lot of things going on in that game because they might be missing three of their top four cornerbacks in that matchup. So if Fuller gets back into a full practice, I think that he's going to be considered a start.
All right. Sammy Watkins.
Sammy Watkins, like one of the biggest disappointments of the year.
The worst. He plays Denver and Chicago. I'm not playing him in either of those games.
It's weird to say that you drop someone that Patrick Mahomes targets regularly like 6 to 8 times. So I don't want to drop him. No, I'm not going to.
When's the last time he had more than 65 yards tags?
Never. Like week 1.
Week 1.
I was going to say, it's been a long time. I know that. But who are you dropping him for, though? That's the question. Are you going to drop him for James Washington? Probably not.
Nah, no. I wouldn't even drop him for... I'd drop him for Zach Pascal.
Yeah, I'd do that, too.
But the thing is, you've got other people on your team I'm certain that you can drop instead of Sammy Watkins. Or your team is stacked. And then you don't need to pick anyone up.
Would you drop Terry McLaurin for Zach Pascal?
I'm not dropping Terry McLaurin. Get out of here, man. He's my dude.
I mean, I like Terry McLaurin. I really do, but...
Philadelphia and the Giants, you're not starting him in those weeks.
Do you trust him?
What do you mean by trust him?
He's caught more than 4 passes just once since week 3. And Dwayne Haskins is just not very good. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think I can play him like confidently is my problem.
I mean, I don't think I can play any wide receiver 3 confidently. Are you confident about Zach Pascal? I'm not.
No, I'm not necessarily confident, but I'm more...
Terry McLaurin is... I like Zach Pascal. He's a good football player. He made the NFL. Of course, he's a great football player. Terry McLaurin's 3 times the football player he is.
I would 100% agree with that, but the quarterback play is also like 20 times worse.
All right, running back position. Let's see here. Who knew Austin Eckler was going to be this good?
Oh, by the way, Tevin Coleman's a drop. I just want to say that before you even ask.
Abso-freaking-lutely, man. He's like the running back 3 or 4 for the 49ers.
Yeah, what do you do with Sony Michel? I mean, I talked about...
Oh, well, cry?
I talked about this with Dan on the podcast, and I'm like, if you made it through, somehow made it through that garbage performance against the Chiefs, do you start him at Cincinnati?
No. No. I'm not. No. I mean, I don't know. I didn't use him in cash games, fortunately, but I was like, I'm using him in GPP, baby. As you can imagine, that did not go well.
It was terrible.
It was so bad. You know who's really good? I wrote this up in my Game Film article earlier today, and I just wanted to remind you guys. So Devin Singletary, last 3 weeks, played the Broncos, the Cowboys, the Ravens, and then he's going to finish the season with the Steelers, Patriots, and Jets. He had 6 horrible matchups, the worst schedule to close the season. Don't you forget that the Bills have turned him into a 3-down bell cow workhorse, and he's really good too. This time, I mean, in drafts next summer, he's going to be so undervalued. I bet he goes in the 3rd or 4th round. I'd take him in the 2nd.
No, I mean, people aren't going to be sleeping on it. Like, there's so much information to go around.
Yeah, but that information is going to tell us, oh, he was only okay the last, 8 weeks of the season.
I mean, Frank Gore is still getting goal line work, so it might keep that. I don't know. I mean, once Gore goes, people are going to be like, oh, this guy's getting 20 touches a game. And it's really tough to find that.
He's already. He got 25 touches last game.
He's definitely turning into a workhorse, but he was, again, still pulled on the goal line. Yeah, he had 25 opportunities, 8 targets, 17 carries. So
they're just trying to get Frank Gore in the Hall of Fame.
I guess.
I mean, I guess everyone thinks he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
The Hall of Very Good.
Yeah. Hall of good. I wouldn't even say very good. He was very good for 1 year.
He was very good. But our conversation on Frank Gore, we've had this one before, and
he's a top 5 running back once in his career.
I love Frank Gore, and I love that he's as durable as he has been, especially after starting his career like considered someone that was fragile and like getting hurt all the time. But the Hall of Fame to me, and this is I'm gonna make my case real quick so you guys understand why I'm saying it, is that the Hall of Fame should be for the elite of the elite of the elite. Like basically, if you were
somebody who dominated it for any like 3-4 year stretch, and Frank Gore didn't dominate for 1 year in his career.
Yes, and basically that's what it is. Like, you have to be, especially at the running back position, you have to be top 3 in the league at some point, and like for multiple years. And I don't think that he was ever that. He was, again, he was really good for a really friggin' long time. And don't use the argument, well, this guy's in, he's got to get in. That's the dumbest argument I've ever heard, because they made one mistake.
Like, what defensive coordinator ever was sweating because he was going up against Frank Gore at any point in his career?
Yeah, I mean, Gore, I guess there were moments, I will say, there were moments during the 49ers days where he was good, and I would have considered him a top 10 running back. But the Hall of, to me, if I'm a voter, I would say the Hall of Fame belongs to the elite, like the guys that you would put on an all-time team because they were that freaking good no matter what was around them.
My friend Brian was a 49ers fan. He was my roommate in college, and he used to beat me every single time with the 49ers just running Frank Gore down my throat.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm a little bit biased. Okay, are we dropping Damian Williams tags?
Ooh, I would wait on that just to see what...
He gets Denver and Chicago. You start him in either of those games, even if we know he's starting. which they're not going to tell us.
Not against Denver, but Chicago, yes. Chicago, they're without Hakeem Hicks. We just found out today that Roquan Smith has went on IR, and they're missing Danny Trevathan. So it's just like legitimately three of the best players up the middle of that defense are now gone. So the Bears are not a scary matchup.
All right, David Johnson?
Oh, he's droppable. I'm never starting him with confidence.
Yeah, I agree with that. Jordan Howard is a drop, right?
Yeah, I don't think he's playing again this year.
LeSean McCoy.
I don't think he's droppable because he's like that guy that...
I don't think he's playable.
It's like 8 to 14 touches. It's almost like if that wide receiver situation happens to you where, you know, you have like so many injuries and all of a sudden you're staring at it and you're like, I just wish I had someone that can give me, you know, 8 to 12 touches. And I think LeSean McCoy can fit that. But, I mean, you don't feel great starting him against Denver this week.
He's like Vance McDonald, man. Like, he had more than 40 yards back in week 7.
Yeah, he's... like I said, I don't know what's going on with Andy Reid's offense. They all of a sudden are just not efficient. I don't know. It's weird, but Denver's not a matchup to get back on track, but I would hold him for week 16 if he does have that job.
I have one more guy to ask about, okay? Matt Breida.
Hold.
I'm holding him too.
He's a guy that even if Raheem Mostert has taken that job, you're still going to see him get, you know, 10 to 12 touches a week, and that has some value.
Yep, I would agree with that. All right, Tags, I guess that's all for today's show, man. Anything you want to add, buddy?
Not really. Just can't wait to the next start or sit episode where we can argue with each other about, you know, who's starting and who's sitting.
I like how you were very careful with that term because both of us have made our producer do some editing when we say that term because it can come out the wrong way sometimes. Start or sit. We're giving away, again, that signed Kenny Golladay helmet. You can check out the details for that at fantasypros.com/contest, or just leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher and send a screenshot of that review to contest@fantasypros.com. And of course, that comes to us from Pristine Auction. So when you go there, sign up. It's free to sign up. Enter the registration code FANTASYPROS, all one word. That's going to get you $5 off your first purchase when you're buying someone a gift or buying yourself a gift, whatever you want to do. And it's going to tell them we're sending people their way. That way we can keep doing these giveaways and hopefully get a lot of you guys some helmets. Again, pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. Don't forget that Tags and I are on YouTube now, youtube.com/fantasypros. And again, if you want to win $25,000 with no risk whatsoever, go to playsparlay.com. That's play, SPARLAY.com. And you're going to have to take me out of the top of the leaderboard because I'm there and I'm there to stay, baby. All right, that's all for today's show. For Mike Tagliere, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening and watching and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a proof of your love. I don't even know how the chemistry works when your rules are kicking in the dirt, kicking in the sand and stirring up trouble. Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex. Ready, set, griddle this grilling season. Get the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle with a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge. It reaches up to 500 degrees. The Weber Works Prep cook and store system keeps cooking supplies handy, and you can carry all the food, condiments, and utensils you need. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate Rust
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.